down by the water.
Welcome back to season 2 of the Run Culture Podcast. My name is Dane Verway. I'm an experienced running physiotherapist, coach, and marathoner. This season will involve open discussions with my running colleagues about the key principles behind injury-free running and optimal performance. It'll be backed by personal experience, science, and history. I can only hope some of these chats inspire curiosity and expand or confirm perspectives and beliefs amongst the running community. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Run Culture Podcast. Today, I am rapt to have two of the guys I coach, Pete and Bevan, with me. Welcome to the show, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us back.
Yeah, cheers. Good to be back. Has been a while.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Bevan, a little while.
Yeah.
Pete, far out. You're the most regular guest.
Yeah, I seem to like talking running, I think.
Yeah, and you're good at it. So now, awesome to have you two on the show because this year, you two have spent a lot of time together. You've done a lot of training together and you recently did a race together at the Gold Coast Half Marathon, and you ran amazingly. So I thought it was only fair to have a show talking about that experience because you've achieved amazing things, and I think you've both potentially surprised yourself over the last 6 months. So I don't know where to start, but I think we start with your race and describe to listeners what event you just did and how you went.
Yeah, so we both went to Gold Coast for the Gold Coast Half Marathon. So that was July 1st. So yeah.
Sub 70 project, it was called.
Yeah.
Chasing under 70 minutes for both of us.
Yeah, and when did you guys start sort of penning that time as a potential goal?
Well, I probably, I entered the race back in April, and it was always part of the long-term plan to go after 70 there.
Yep.
So yeah, I had it on my like bucket list to tick off for months before.
Yeah. Yep. And Bev?
I literally entered the day before entry closed, so it was kind of in the back of my mind. Pete had been trying to convince me to come along, but it was always like, oh, maybe we'll see. And then he eventually convinced me to come, but once I committed, it was like I'm going sub 70 now, so it was pretty committed once I actually said I'd come.
Well, and booked a plane ticket. It just made the most sense because you were at the start of the build, you're helping me out with the training sessions, and you got to a point where it's like, well, you're at the 70% mark of doing the work, so like if you were interested, you might as well commit to the race and we just go all in and go for it.
Yeah, and I thought it was a really good idea too, because it's something that, you know, a trip like that where you're sort of going over there together, both of you sort of had a goal this year of doing new things, and I think it was sort of along those lines too. So, and not to mention, like, Bevan, you're about to go off on a 3-month extravaganza, like a massive adventure across Europe. And you'd done so much training and you put so much work in to your running that I felt like it was awesome to get like some kind of result before you go away. Maybe lose a little bit of fitness, but and enjoy yourself, which you should do at 20, and see the world. You just had something to sort of like earmark this sort of last few months of training with. So yeah, I was so glad that we managed to twist your arm to do it, because I think it's a trip, now that you reflect on it, that you'll never really forget.
Yeah, well, I was in the fitness of my lifetime, so it was worth getting a result out of it.
How do you know you're in the fitness of your lifetime? Like, what were some indicators or signs that you're like, oh, hang on, I'm so fit at the moment? Like, how did you know that?
few early cross country races, raced very well. Yep. They've been ones I've struggled with a bit more in the past. And then there were a couple of sessions, and like I was doing track sessions and singing mid session.
Yeah, you were.
But me and Pete did a 40-minute progression run along Stumpy Gully Road, and like 35 minutes in or something, we went down to 3:15s, was it?
Yeah, about that.
And I started absolutely hammering it in a session I'm usually not particularly good at.
Yep.
And I was literally running that last 5 minutes just thinking, like, my God, I'm fit right now.
Yes.
And I think that was probably about the point where I was like, yep, I'm going to go to Gold Coast. Got a good time in me.
Yep.
Got to get something out of this fitness before I go away and get a little bit less fit.
I think one of the biggest indicators where I knew you guys would be close to the money in terms of that 70-minute mark was your Albert Park result. When you both showed that you could run 31.5 over 10K, like that's well under 32 minutes, and that was a big breakthrough run for both of you to, well, I mean, what was your 10K PB, Bevan, before that?
33 flat.
Yeah, so it was a minute and a half quicker, and so I think, and then Pete, like, you know, a good 30, 40 seconds quicker than your old best too. So it was just showing that you suddenly had started to build up this type of strength and aerobic fitness that you hadn't had before, purely because of consistency and working together and just keeping on rocking up week in, week out.
Yeah, and that was really where it started. We realized we didn't have to do anything crazy in the next, I think we had 8 weeks or so from Albert Park. And we realized all we have to do is just fine tune some half marathon work and get a little bit more volume in the long runs, and like we don't have to do anything crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were just consistent from Albert Park, knowing we had the strength, the fitness, and we were able to run fast at the moment. So we just had to just take that next little step.
Yeah. What are some examples of like you mentioned the Stumpy Gully long, like 60-minute sort of progressive runs, Bevan? But what are some other examples of what you maybe did a little bit differently? It wasn't much, was it? Like it was kind of, all right, you're fit. You might just need to like do a few longer sessions just for confidence. But we didn't like totally change the wheel.
No, it was nothing majorly crazy. Like I reckon the longest session we did was the 3x3K, was it?
I think he did a 2x5K.
Yeah, a few like that.
4x2K even.
Yep.
Probably the most bit, 2K reps we've done.
Bit longer sessions than I usually do, but
a few 8x1Ks.
There was nothing absurd or totally unnecessary in there. Like still managing the training so I could recover well from it, and we could run on Wednesdays and then get back for a Thursday session. And
but at the end of the day, those single sessions don't look crazy like by themselves. If you look at the 6 weeks we put together, it was just stacking one session into the next session, long run into the next long run, and then you look at the block and it's like we've had 8 like half marathon sessions and a lot of long runs, and that's where it kind of comes from.
Because of the way we did it too, I think we were running all our sessions very well. We weren't going really hard on a Tuesday, rocking up on a Thursday and running a, you know, pretty average session because we're a bit tired. We'd rock up and run another good session.
Yes.
So you'd get 3 good sessions a week instead of 2 good ones and 1 average one where you feel pretty bad. And
100%. Like I noticed that. Like you're both very good now at feeling the session out and just going, okay, well, what's the bigger picture here? Oh, I don't need to go to town on this session. I'll just do what I need to do. I'm feeling a bit tired from work, or I'm still tired from the race on the weekend. And you did that well. Like you navigated those 8 weeks from Albert Park to the half marathon well. Like we sort of scheduled a couple of easier weeks, like where the sessions weren't, like the intent wasn't to like go as strongly, and the sessions were designed to just get through these, and you don't have to, you know, can be in third gear for a couple of weeks. And then you sort of put like, you know, five weeks where there were a few sessions where you're like, okay, this is a bit of a harder session, but the paces are obviously like modulated, like, and they're a bit easier. So like I think you both understand now, like like, okay, what's the purpose of this session? And you can see that you're holding back and thinking about like where you are in your cycle and where you are in preparation with the race. So yeah, I think you both can, from a coach's perspective, I can really see that you're viewing the bigger picture. Whereas there's kids that I see at the school coaching that I do, or patients that I treat, where I can see that they get carried away and they're unable to do that still.
Yeah, and that's definitely one thing we were trying to show the younger guys in the group as well. So like, it's not all about, you gotta know what the purpose is long term of why you're doing sessions.
Yep.
And you don't have to go to the well and hammer everything. There's merit in not depleting yourself every day.
You guys are on a pretty similar structure, like Mondays and Fridays, you've kind of got the option to either don't run, or you go on the bike, or you do drills, or you do a 10-minute run, 20-minute run, 30-minute run. Like, we're sort of modulating those 2 days, and the real purpose of those 2 days each week is recovery and to go easy. So I think that's important for people to hear. And then, like, what kind of mileage would you guys be doing? What's a bit of an example of an average week for you guys?
Through the Gold Coast build, I was probably hitting 90, but that, like I've heard on like the John's podcast that you did last week.
Yeah.
So definitely go listen to that if you haven't. But he pretty much said the
good plug.
He'd hate me if I didn't give him a mention.
Good podcaster.
But yeah, the whole, he pretty much said a similar thing as well. It's like, we were just trying to get the important things and the important days right, and then our recovery days were up and down.
Yeah.
So I was getting 90K weeks, but each week was different. Like the middle 3 days and the weekend might be high volume, and I might have had Monday off, or like we were real flexible with Monday and Friday. Some weeks were runs, some were just, let's not even bother, like we're tired. And
yep.
So yeah, so about 90K weeks, but each week was different.
Yep.
I think I was about 80 to 85.
Yep.
So a little bit less, but
yeah,
not that much. And, you know, I was pretty similar. Some Mondays particularly, I'd run or ride my bike, or if I didn't feel up to either, I'd go for a swim.
Basketball.
I'd have basketball that night. So I'd play 10 PM basketball games, which isn't the smartest, but it's fun. So do it anyway, but...
No, I think
so.
I
the
think
training
something...
was probably a bit up from what I'd previously been doing, so it was already an increase for me. So I was happy with it at that sort of Ks per week.
Yep, I think there's a hidden hidden thing in that basketball. Like, it's keeping your plyometrics going. It's keeping you sprinting down the court, athletic, and it's fun, like you said. So, and it's social.
Just so, as long as I stay on my feet and
exactly.
Don't hurt myself.
Yeah, it's happened a couple of times, but you haven't lost too many weeks or days from it.
Just sore for a few days sometimes.
All right, let's talk about Gold Coast Half. Tell us about the trip and the travel over there and pre-race. So, I know it was a week and a half ago, but where did you stay and... can you remember like how the lead up went to the race? I remember getting a few photos back home and you guys looked so excited going to the pre-race expo. And it was obviously the first time Bevan's ever done an event like that. So, how'd you go like leading up to that start line?
Once I got through the plane delays to actually get there, I managed to get there like maybe 2 hours. 3 hours later than I was meant to, but not too bad in comparison to some people.
Yes.
I mean, it was just awesome to be somewhere with some sunshine, and that instantly made me a bit more energetic. But yeah, the expo and all that sort of stuff, and just the vibe around the place with everyone, you know, there's so many people there for this event. It was a pretty cool vibe and thing to be a part of and get to experience. Like, it's quite a high level event, so...
What was Pete like to travel with?
I didn't actually travel up there with them, but met them over there and stayed with them. And
or stay with, what was Pete like?
It was good company.
Yeah, I will
probably kept me in control enough pre-race, so I didn't do too much.
Because, that was the thing. It was Bevan's first experience of going to a race like that, like a major, like, gold label kind of half marathon and marathon festival.
Yeah.
So I just... showed him, because I've been there a few times, I just showed him the ropes of like, all right, we're going to go pick up our numbers. That's like, and the most important thing I told him was take it all in. because this is like, it's such a cool moment for you doing the whole elite area and elite start and stuff that we'll talk about in a bit. But
yeah,
so that was the thing I tried to get across.
What was that elite start like?
It was like, from my perspective, it's a cool experience, like, and we're grateful for the Gold Coast race organizers for allowing us the off our Albert Park times to get into the elite start, because I mean, on our half PBs alone, we didn't have the standard, but we were lucky enough to, our 10K was good enough to for us to get in there.
Now, I've seen some of the photos of the start line, and there's Robbo, Bevan, and then was it Gregson?
Yeah.
Geez, three big names in Australian distance training.
two slightly bigger, but yeah, it was a pretty cool place to stand on the start line.
Didn't they fist pump in front of you?
Yeah, they fist pumped in front of me for a race.
Yeah. But,
you know, I kind of stood there, and Pete said to me, these are probably going to be the top two. Don't go out too hard.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, just being standing next to guys of that level sort of thing. And you know, I don't quite fit in with them, but knowing you do belong on that start line is a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally with Brett Robinson, probably one of the best in Australia over that distance.
No, it was so cool. Like, talk about it.
Was pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you just embraced it. Like, it was so good that you just had the confidence to go, I'm going to stand on this start line here.
I've reflected a bit on that, and I'm like, 10-year-old me would have gone wild. Like, obviously, it wasn't Brett at that stage.
Yeah.
But 10-year-old me would have been wild to be standing next to, like, an Olympian on a race start line.
Yeah.
It's like, now looking at it, it's like, it's a very cool thing to do and pretty special to be there.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah, how good. Like, it's so good to, like, you know, slow down and take those moments in. And Pete, you were feeling a bit average before the race. Was that, is that right?
Yeah. I didn't have the best, like, day or two leading into the race. I felt pretty average. I was starting to get sick. And I just, I woke up race morning feeling pretty average, but I had confidence knowing that we'd put the work in, and I wasn't sick enough that it was going to affect me too much, I'd hope. Yep. It was just a matter of, we still go through the motions, go to the start line, we race, how stick to the race plan, and if it pays off, it pays off. If I run crap, then oh well, we'll go again.
And I mean, we'll talk through it now, but you both raced amazingly, and I was just following along from home, looking at the live stream tracker on the app and seeing every 5K split come up between you, Pete, Bevan, and my brother Ned, and it was pretty fun to watch from home because you're all just like clockwork out there. Talk us through, what pack you sat in and how the race unfolded.
Yeah, so I messaged Bevan, I think, a couple of days before we were meant to fly out, and I said, look, this is my plan. I feel like we're in, because the whole plan was to break 70, but I said to him, the work we've done, I think we can break 109.30, and if we can close well, I reckon sub 109 is not out of reach. And looking at the elite women's field, I thought, all right, there's a few women, like Liam Pompiani, Izzy Bat Doyle, that will probably go out and like 109 to 109.30. I said to Bevan, if you're cool with it, this is the pack we should go in.
Yeah.
And just feel it out early.
Yeah.
And just see if it's too hard or not, and we'll just see how long we can last.
What was it like in that pack?
It was a big pack, and I think Liam Pompiani had a couple of paces up the front, so we knew it was going to be on, and they were going to go after 109. So it just made the job easy.
Yeah.
We walked in early. I think our first K was like 3:15, and like, well, this is set up for this. Like, if we can go with this, we're gonna go well under 70.
Yeah,
and it just made it easy. There's a photo, Bevan jokingly last night. He's like, we're meant to be enjoying the sport. I don't think we're both we want to be here. It's just we're both next to each other, just focused. Just
literally like in. 3K in. Just.
I think you were locked in. Like, that photo was just like you guys were just trying to relax and conserve and you're in the flow state maybe.
It's already in.
How'd you find it, Bev?
I mean, I knew that I was thinking sub 70 would be like, if I went 69-59, I was happy. Like,
yep.
Sub 70 was going to be huge for me. So I, when Pete said 69-30, go with the women's pack, I was like, yeah, I'm in for that. Sounds like a good plan, but I was very aware that that might be a bit quick for me still.
Yep.
So, I mean, I did go out with them and relaxed into it, and it felt pretty good. And it, like, was the right pack in the end, but yeah, I was very cautious early of, I can slow this down if I need it, still faster than the pace I was initially thinking.
So. Yeah, it's a tricky situation. Like I feel like going with a pace and going with a pack, you can conserve energy by sitting in, and it can be very helpful not having to worry about pace. You just like, oh, it's a simple as just staying with this pack, and that's all you had to worry about. So it can serve mental energy too. But all it has to be is like slightly fast, and it can have the opposite effect. So, but I mean, I think you were both fit enough, and obviously by the results, like, it paid off. Yeah, once you got to say like the 10K mark, how were you both feeling?
Yeah, so I think about 8 to 8.5K, the pack split a little bit, because the pace of the front was, it felt like it was starting to ramp up just a little bit, but you could tell the people that wanted to like be like 69-30 to 70 kind of dropped off a little bit. And there was a point where I had to make a decision quickly. It was, do I go with this pace, or do I sit in like no man's land essentially and hope that a second pack forms? And I made the decision to go with it and just commit. So I went with, I think at that point it was Michael Shelley, Leanne Pompiani.
Gee, that's a pretty big name to be running with at the Gold Coast.
Yeah, and I thought, I'm not going to die wandering. I don't want to finish the race and be like, well, if I went with that pack, how quick could I have gone? So I only know one way to race, and I jumped straight on the back of the pace and went for it.
Yep. And what did you do, Bevan, at this point?
I was a bit opposite. Yep. I'd seen the pace clock at 10K and knew I was just under 70-minute pace, pretty happy with where I was.
Yeah.
And I saw the pack split, and so it split into two. I think Pete's went with Pompiani, and mine was still with Ali and Izzy Bat Doyle.
Yeah.
And I decided to sit back for about a K with them, thought I'd stick on the pace a bit more. But I think that one might have slightly dropped.
Yeah.
So then I decided I'd go off alone and just run in the middle of both packs from about 11 to 17K.
Yeah.
Just running solo and backing myself to find a way through. And just like, I was aware that at 10K I still had more than half the race to go.
Yep.
You know, like, I've only raced that distance once, so I was more set to be within a pace I knew I could hold than go out and push it too early and blow up.
Yeah, no, that's smart. And so how did you both sort of feel at the 17K mark? Like, where was your head at, Pete? You've run a blinder of a race to this point, and you really had to sort of dig deep to sort of go with that pack. Like, how were those final 4Ks?
Yeah, it was, even before that, it was an interesting kind of thought process, because from 10K, it was rare kind of, it was a rare spot to be in. I've never gone through halfway that quick.
Yeah.
My halfway split was 34.52, I think, which suggests.
And what was that for 10K?
32.45, which is like a minute quicker than I've gone through 10K or halfway in before.
Yep.
So it was just like, we're just going to have to take it a K at a time and just, but yeah, at about, I think, 15K. So we start coming back towards Southport, and we start going over the bridges of the canals. So yep. I was kind of on and off the back of the group, just because they would slow a little bit on the way up the hit, like the climb, and I'd like close the gap and then get dropped on the downhill.
Yeah.
But yeah, at about 16K, I knew that I probably couldn't push any harder, because it was going to start, I was going to start losing time. Like, I felt like I was on that
knife's edge.
Yeah, it was definitely a knife's edge between, I've run for an hour at this point, or close enough, at like 3:15s down to 3:10s.
Yeah, you got your guys' pace, like I said, was just like, clockwork. Like, it was just within this bandwidth of just a few seconds the whole way through, sort of until that stage for you, Pete.
Yeah, but getting the 17K, it got hard.
Yeah.
The leg started to tighten up. It was, which is a long way out, like 18K in, you still got 3K to go. But I just thought, just got to stay upright. I'm not losing a lot of time. I just got to keep the legs pushing forward.
Yeah. And how are you feeling at this point, Bev? Could you see Pete?
Yeah, Pete was probably 100 metres up the road maybe at that point. But I was feeling better as I was going into it. So like the further I got, I was feeling better and better. And I think once I hit 5K to go, I felt good enough that in my mind, I was going to be home for sub 70 from there.
Yes.
So like I had that, I felt like I knew from 5K out that I was going to be able to hold on to the pace. I think I needed like 16:30 or 40 maybe for the last 5K.
Yeah.
And I felt good enough that I was like, yeah, I've got that. So I think I got a bit of the adrenaline of, I feel pretty good here, and started to almost kick a bit from probably 3 or 4K out.
Yeah.
And just...
Well, I mean, I've obviously talked to you guys about this prior to this, and I remember you saying that you started just hunting people down.
Yeah, well, the whole pack that kind of, when the pack split at, 10 or 11K or whatever it was, a lot of them... through the last 5K, I was just running them down. So, you know, every time you go past a person, or at least for me, it gives you a little bit more, and suddenly you're chasing the next person. And I find it a lot easier to chase people than be trying to hold on to my own pace. Catching a person just motivates me a bit more, gives me a bit more drive to keep going.
When did you get up to peak?
It was probably 2.5, maybe 2K. Because we were...
Was there any words spoken at this point, or you're both sort of
I had enough in me. I said, I heard someone yell out Bevan's name, I think it was just before that. It was after the drink station. I'm like, all right, he's caught up. And he went
past... As he does.
As he does. And he went past me, and very convincingly too, by that. And I just said...
Wait, how many races is it now that he's done this to you?
It's a lot. But if you look at it from the other thing, me and him being in the same race, it forces us to
run better,
go to the well.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I knew the only way I was going to get over the line ahead of him, I had to work pretty much from the start. I couldn't let it go to sit and wait for a K because I'm losing that kick.
Yeah.
9 out of 10 times.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
You run different races, but your times are very similar for a lot of events.
My very whole different thing, race styles.
Yeah.
My whole thing was if I survive this pace, I'll be able to get him. Otherwise, he's going to come past me. And
it's so good to have someone like that, that not only you train with, but compete against. Having someone that's so similar, it just gives you someone to gauge off on how you're going. 100%. Yeah.
Well, I reckon that's why we're such good training partners.
Yeah.
Because we both like to run very differently. We're both ultra competitive.
Yeah.
And it just makes the other one push a bit harder. Because, you know, Pete does like to really grit out a race. And don't get me wrong, I like to do that too. But I would, in terms of tactically, I would much rather sit comfortable for 3/4 of the race and then just really punish people over the last quarter.
Yeah.
And just make it that brutal pace at the end that you really don't want to run.
Yeah.
And plus, because we're so different, it gives each other person an element in training that we're both missing.
Yeah.
I feel like I have that strength in the longer stuff to help. And then when it comes to the speed side of things, Bevan's naturally better at the speed stuff than I am. So I think it gels well. And that's why we're able to do 90% of our training together this last block and just both go to that next level.
Nah.
It means one's always pushing the other. It's not like one of us is constantly in front in every session or every race.
Yeah, and it's chopping and changing. It's either depending on what it is, but then it's just depending on the week too. You might be feeling a bit off, so the other guy is up and about, and then the next week it just flips. I think that's really well said by both of you, how you complement each other. Your race styles are very different, so... you know, if Bevan got too relaxed and sat back and waited for the kick, you'd be too far ahead, Pete. So he had to keep the pace reasonably strong to keep you within arm's length, and then
Because it does happen too when you get tired. Like, I've forgotten to kick in races before.
Yeah.
And I've had, I think it was a track meet, and Pete was standing on the sidelines with like 400 to go and had to tell me it was time to kick. Yeah, like, there are times where you just don't kick because it goes out of your head. But having Pete up there, it's like, the whole time I was thinking, how am I going to get to Pete before the finish line? When am I going to go?
So once you got to Pete, like, what was the next target? Like, Pete's just holding on, and just really trying to, like, keep those legs ticking over and get to the line. What was your next target?
Still at that stage in my mind, all I was thinking was, I'm on for sub 70 here, like, maybe 69 mid. And then probably about K and a half out, I saw Pompiani up the road. And I was like, all right, that's the next target. She was a fair way up the road from me. But Pete had said, oh, the finish is a long straight. Last K is just dead straight. You'll love it. And I came around the corner onto that straight and I was like, I'm going to run her down here. And I saw at that point I saw probably the 20K clock. And I thought, far out, I'm going quick. And just gave it everything over the last K.
Yeah.
And the real motivation was catch Pompiani as quick as I could. And then see what happens from there was what I was hoping.
I mean, you gave the Run Culture singlet some great exposure on the live stream. It was, you flew past Pompiani, to be honest. And it was a great finish. You finished in 15:44, I think, for the last 5K.
43 for the last
5K.
The 3 flat final K.
3 flat, yeah. So not many people can finish a half marathon, particularly one of their, it was your second ever, like, serious half marathon like that. To be honest, I earmarked you as like someone a bit shorter distance, like 1500, 3K, 5K. Has it changed your perspective on like potentially like maybe an event in the future, like in terms of where your best event might be?
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I felt about being called a 1500 meter runner. I think it lit a little fire in me and I changed a bit, but definitely I think like I wasn't expecting that in the half marathon. I still thought, I was never sure about 1500, but I was kind of like, I could be a 5K, 10K runner.
Yep.
But after that one, I'm like, fire out, maybe I could do something over this distance.
Yeah.
Because like, I got to the end and I was like, I still kind of feel okay.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't feel this good right now, but yeah, so definitely I think I can be more of a distance guy as well, but I do still, I mean, the short distance does still interest me.
And Pete, like, it was so good seeing you cross the line just moments after. I mean, like, when you cross the line, like, and you just look so glad to finish, that you're finished. Talk us through those last couple of Ks.
Yeah, it definitely gave me a better appreciation of the distance, I think. Because I realised that even though I'm fit, I can still get it wrong. I can still, like, overestimate, like, the shape I'm in.
Yep.
And just tactically, I felt like I got it a little bit wrong in the middle of the race.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the last couple of K, I'd realise looking at the clock after probably 16K, I thought, unless I completely run out of legs and start running 340s or 330s, like, I'm safely under 70.
Yeah.
So that was just in the back of my mind, just each K, just... And I looked at my watch, I think at 17 or 18K, I'm like, I'm not losing, the pace isn't slowing that drastically. I'm like, I'm still going to run low 109s, but I just got to get each K. And then it got to, I think, 2K to go, and it was just like, all right, let's just half a K at a time, and we'll just keep just moving forward. And then I managed to get there.
Yeah, no, I were super wrapped, like, to be that far under the 70-minute project, like, your goal for both of you, and then to see Ned nip under as well, to have three of the guys from the squad to run well at the same time on the same day on an event that they both earmarked, or all earmarked, like, you know, 8 to 10 weeks out, was fantastic, and it was, like, a great feeling as a coach to see that. Yeah, so how was post-race celebrations, or what did the next few days look like after you sort of finally ticked off that sub 70?
I mean, immediately post-race, like, first thing I did was turn around and see Ned and Pete coming down the finishing chute, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And then, for like probably half an hour afterwards, everyone's still got a bit of adrenaline of what they just did.
Yeah.
Everyone's pretty up and about, having some fun together. But once the adrenaline wore off, we crashed pretty quickly. I think we went out for dinner that night and we had one drink each and then we're like, it's time to go home. Need to go to bed.
It's a big day, isn't it? Like, you're up pretty early. So it's one of the longest days that you actually have, I reckon, because you're up early. You get a half marathon done.
3:30 a.m. we got up.
Yeah.
Plus, I already didn't feel amazing at that point.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if that affected the last couple of K, but yeah, as soon as I finished, I was pretty done.
He crumbled at the finish line.
I had nothing left. The legs were done. Every muscle had just completely tightened up.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, like, I had energy, but like Bevan said, as soon as the adrenaline wore off, that was it. That was me done. Sickness fully sunk in at that point, and it was a rough kind of last couple of days.
Look, I think it bodes well, like the fact that you sort of felt, you know, potentially there might have been a bit of like a sickness hanging over your head going into the race. But then not only that, like, just both of you are pretty young to the event, really. Like, you haven't done many of them, and you haven't done many build-ups. And like you said, Pete, it's like, well, maybe I got the race tactics a little bit wrong in the middle. You learn from that. You know, maybe there's, you know, another 30 seconds out there just in terms of, like, tactically.
I definitely identified that. Like, if you look at my 5K splits, the first two were where I wanted them to be, but then from 10 to 15K was, like, 16 or 11, which you look at it, that's, like, 60... It's, like, 67 low pace or mid.
Yeah.
So it just... From...
You're already on for a good PB, and then, like... Then you're sort of like you're getting a bit greedy a bit.
even with that though, the goal was still under 70 minutes, and you went like 69:32,
69:26, which is a cool split in itself, because there's a story behind that. Like, days before, or even weeks, I think I mentioned it somewhere. Like, I'm gonna run a split. I'm gonna run a race that John will want to split the next day in the marathon.
And he did.
He did. Perfectly. Pretty much perfectly. And that was one of those cool moments where, like, when he was doing the half and stuff, it's like you always dream of, like, all right, one day my race is going to be his halfway split. And it was kind of that cool moment where it's like, cool, I've just done that, and he's essentially done it twice.
Yeah. Just on that, you've both mentioned that, like, obviously I interviewed John early in the week, and he said you were on top of his mind when he went through halfway on whether he could match your time, and then you're obviously thinking about it, like, a few weeks, you know, out from the race, like, trying to set a time that he'd find it that could be a good sort of projected sort of halfway split for himself. How motivated are you to beat all your brother's records? Like, I'm interested to see, like, how much of a sibling rivalry there is, and just where your head's at with all
just
that
stuff. Just to give a quick gauge on that, the first thing John said when he walked in the door after his 2:20 was, I ran your half marathon split, Pete.
Yeah.
It's strong from John's side.
Yeah.
Get Pete's side.
Oh, yeah, I've thought about this for a while, and to be honest, the motivation to beat all his PBs isn't there, in the sense it's like, as soon as I'm thinking, all right, my whole objective is to beat his times, I feel like I'm in the sport for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Because then all I'm putting my focus on is beating someone just to have bragging rights that don't really mean much to me.
Yeah, just like an ego thing.
Like, my whole career, people have had this, like, narrative. It's like, all right, you're going to be better than John one day. You're going to be better than John. And I've never,
like... Who's saying that?
Like, just, like, in the sense, it's like, when he was making big improvements, I was, like, a young, like, under 16 athlete. It's like, you've got this, it's more of a, from a potential standpoint.
Yeah.
And I've always thought my whole goal around that wasn't to get to his time to be better than him. It was more get to his level So then we can elevate each other to an even higher level. So it's there's no real sibling rivalry from my side. It's more I want him to be better, and I think I can help him do that.
Yeah. No, you can motivate each other. It's not about outdoing each other. It's about pushing each other forward. I like that. That's really nice. I wasn't sure where you'd sit on that. So that's cool. Biggest takeaway from the whole experience, guys, like, so when you reflect on it and, you know, even the days that you stayed for after the event, what are some of the biggest takeaways from the whole experience?
I think my biggest takeaway is probably that I know I can run fast over the longer distance, and that's where my future lies. Even if I slightly get it wrong on race day, I still think there's big improvements to be made.
Yeah, Bevan?
It would literally be like, say yes to doing those sort of things, because it's now the second event of that sort of thing I've done this year, both that I was a bit on the fence about doing and going to, and both have been like huge for just having fun, but also making me a better runner now and making me look at running very differently. It's like, if I hadn't run that, I'd still probably go into next season looking at myself as a 3K, 5K, 1500 meter guy. Whereas now I'm like, maybe I can also do things over that longer distance as well. So it would literally just be to like, just take the experiences that come, because they won't always be there and you won't always be able to do them. So,
geez, that's some wisdom spoken there. And that's exactly along the line of both of your New Year's resolutions for this year, was like, try new things, be open to new experiences, because they can really reshape your perspective on, oh, hang on, actually, I really enjoyed that. I didn't know I'd enjoy that. And then you learn new things.
I reckon you learn the most when you do those sort of things that aren't quite, I don't know, in your comfort zone or what you were expecting to do.
Yes.
When it's a bit more unexpected, you probably learn more about yourself than if you just rock up and run XCR every weekend, which, you know, I'll probably come about 30th to 40th. I'll, you know, just the safety net of doing the same thing.
So, yeah, on that, like, it's your 21st birthday coming up very shortly. You're currently planning it, and that's something new and different. And, and then you've obviously got your European sort of holiday where you've been planning that for a little while and saving up for that. How much do you think you've changed and over the last several years, just doing running and being part of the running group? What are you looking forward to over the next 3 or so months while you're away?
I've changed so much. Like, when I joined you guys, I was pretty quiet, pretty reserved, didn't say much. Now I'd probably say I'm one of the louder ones in the group. But like, I've learnt so much and stuff. And yeah, it's just like, last time I came on the podcast, I think you asked a question of like bucket list ideas.
Yeah.
And it was, my bucket list idea was to backpack Europe.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I'm going to go backpack Europe.
Yeah.
When I said it was like, oh, this would be fun one day.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, like, I said it, but not with any intention of doing it.
Yeah.
Because it was something very not me, meeting all new people and being independent in a different country and challenging myself a lot. Whereas now it's like, I'm actually doing it and I'm happy to be doing it and putting myself outside that comfort zone a bit.
Jeez, yeah, that's unreal, Bev. And that actually is really cool for everyone to hear, like, how good it is to ask like questions of yourself, like your future self, and what you actually really would want to do or be, or you know, even 10 years down the track or 5 years down the track. And even at the time, it just seems like this bucket list kind of like flippant sort of statement, but it's funny how just that plants a seed and unconsciously you start making decisions without knowing it, to sort of push yourself to do that. So yeah, Pete, what about yourself? Like, what are you looking forward to, like, over the next several months?
Well, yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? I'm in the process of trying to decide what's next. yeah. From like a running perspective and just in general life perspective, and
yep.
Hopefully I can find the answer soon.
Yeah, yeah. Have you got any plans?
Nothing that's concrete enough to mention at yes. this stage, unfortunately. Because I feel like every time I come on the podcast, I get asked that, and I say, yeah, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do. But until I actually do it, then it would just be another mention of something that's hypothetical.
Yeah, yeah. Bevan and I both know what you've got planned. So you can tell your inner sanctum, guys, and that's enough. And we'll hold you accountable.
the listeners might find out over a podcast.
Yeah.
Someday.
Yep.
Nah, and I think they're challenging sort of things that you actually really want to do. So it's exactly along the lines of what you should be thinking. So that's good, Pete. You mentioned, you know, ideas of going longer, and I think you're ready to start thinking of that as well, from a running perspective. So one of the listener questions by Ben Griffith was, you know, is there an idea of doing a marathon in the long term with you, Pete?
Yeah, I know what Ben's answer that he wants me to give is. He wants me to pace him at Melbourne this year. I'm currently assessing all my options in regards to a marathon debut.
Yeah.
But I think, like on the question about what I'm going to do next, I think it's too far out to announce it yet.
Yep.
I just want to
know.
A
lot of secrecy. Like,
yeah. It's,
let's go on a podcast and be secretive.
Well, it's,
he can't let
it's
me know all these secrets.
It's one of those things. I don't like, you announce it and it could be like 12 months away. It could be 2 years away. It's like, what can happen in that space of time?
Yeah.
Like it's hard to say, yeah, ideally, like we'll do one at this date, but you never.
What would you want to do if time's not an issue, if things aren't an issue, what do you want to do no matter when? Like, what do you want to do from a lifestyle point of view, holiday point of view, adventure kind of thing?
Essentially, yeah. travel the world and race.
Yeah.
Race the world, I guess, in the sense.
Yeah. Yep. And become a marathoner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe longer. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows where my limits truly lie?
Yes.
I think that's the thing that excites me. It's still fresh, and there's still so much unknown about where I can take my running career.
Nah, that's awesome. Guys, is there anything else you wanted to talk about at all?
I think there's a few listener questions that we should get through.
Yeah.
So Rebecca Black wanted to know, do we have any race day habits or superstitions that we stick to?
Bev?
Yes. Very much. I will always tie my shoes up twice on a start line. So I'll tie them up, untie them, and then tie them up again.
Not only does he do that on a start line, he does that every training session.
So that's a weird one from me. And I also have a race day pair of underwear. But I don't actually race in underwear. I'll just wear them to the event and home from the event. But won't wear them during the event. So I have some weird ones.
Too much information.
mine's not as weird as that. I tend to just wear the same kit for all my races. I seem to, I'll buy like jackets and long sleeves and stuff, and the start of that year I'll wear them every race, and that would be like my race day attire, I guess you can call.
Yep.
But that's probably my only real habit.
You keep your shoelaces tied up.
Yeah.
Why do you reckon you do that, Bev?
Just a little bit OCD about things. And the shoes is I get paranoid that they're not tied enough the first time.
Yeah.
So I fully undo them so I can make sure they're done perfectly, and I do them again. And then it's like I've done them twice. They're going to be fine now. I know they're fine. If I only do them once, I spend the entire race stressing that my shoe is going to come untied. So, I don't know. Twice is just the number, and it lets me settle and I think it's also gives me something to do at a start line.
Well, yeah,
rather than just stand there and wait, I crouch down and untie and retie my shoelace.
Yeah, I think I do the same thing, like, unconsciously as well. It's like, you're like, oh, I tie my shoelaces up, it's fine. But then you walk to the start line or something and you're like, oh, do they loosen? Are they going to come undone? Because you never want to be that person that, like, early on in a race, you're like, oh, my shoelace is coming undone.
And I've just got a hold of the listener questions. Another one from Ben Griffith. Any new notable new followers on Strava or the Gram since GC?
I'm
not sure there's been a single new one, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think so. None that come from the race. There's been some since. But, like, on that, like, we definitely appreciate anyone that supports us on our social medias and with comments and likes and stuff. It definitely goes a long way to helping us.
The kudos.
Yeah.
Charlie Kyberg, name one thing that was the most important factor for your breakthrough performances.
PDs can go well, I think.
So I think everything about my running stems from a confidence standpoint. So I think mine was knowing that we were further along in the training than we were this time last year. Because I think last year going to the Gold Coast, I'd only been back properly running maybe 4 months at that point. So I didn't think I was fully ready for the 10K. So just having confidence in that and having confidence in the process, knowing we're in shape.
Yep.
I did like a couple of little things in the build up that are new to me. But I would also agree that the biggest one was confidence. Like, I came to you just before I signed up for it and said, do you honestly believe I can run sub 70? And you said yes. And once you said yes, it's like, to me, that's like certain. If you believe, I believe in myself. And if I believe in myself, I'll probably run like an animal and do everything in my power to do it. And if I can't do it, I'll leave my body somewhere on the road.
No, that's really, really awesome point, guys. Like, I think, confidence, people just brush over confidence. They go, confidence. But
definitely.
I think it's a massive part. And how do you get confident? It's just through people believing in you and saying they believe in you. But it's also you believing in yourself too. And how do you do that? Like, it's just proving to yourself experientially through training over time. And then you just have a general feeling, don't you? Like, the perceived effort on some sessions, just, you know, like, oh, that actually came out really easy. And sometimes it's not necessarily like, oh, I did a PB, but that session just was so easy.
Like the last session we did, it was 8x K.
Yeah.
I think we were 9 days out or 10 days out or so.
Mm.
And we
were like,
our splits were like insanely close. Like, the aim was to hit 3:10s, and I think the range was like 309.6 to something like that. And
we felt like we were jogging, which
and we
isn't right.
Yeah.
And I know we finished that session and we both like, all right, we're on.
Got
a taper now, like, we're on at Gold Coast.
It's a session we'd done a few times and that one felt considerably better and, like, just so much easier than every other time we'd done it.
Yeah, there's the important.
I think we knew, like, we were on for something special at that point.
There's the importance of, repeating a session sometimes. Like, I think you did that session 3 times in the build-up. The fact that it got easier as you went. But I think there's also something in that, like, in terms of the partnership that you two formed in the build-up to that race, but even just over the past half year, where you've trained together a lot and you almost are feeding each other confidence too. Like, you know, 1 minute, like, someone's a bit down, but the last week you were carrying the ship, so then you know that, you know, it's not so much that you're unfit or it's just that you're a bit tired or the fact that you're sort of both in it together and you've got this sort of team aspect, I think that can help feed confidence too, because you're sort of, it's not just you, there's two people in it, and you're sort of helping the other person when they're a bit down. You can get a bit in your head when it's just yourself, but when you've got two people sort of trying to foster that performance, I think you can you know, two heads is sometimes better than one, or often better than one, because you can sort of look at it from different angles and help each other.
Plus, we got like 10 guys in our group that are all feeding energy.
Yeah.
And any given day, plus we're grateful for them as well, jumping in and out of our sessions, helping us out through the build. And it just, they were giving us energy too, like, you guys are fit, like, yous are on, yous are getting the work done, this is exciting. And it just adds an even bigger layer of energy to what we're already doing and thinking.
I mean, they've been on the journey, that like, they've sort of walked every sort of session, and they sort of know what you've been through. So they've, it's kind of like really valuable feedback, isn't it? When you've got someone that, like, you just know, they know your story, and they're saying it, like, they're not just saying it to say it, like, they're saying it because they authentically
belief. It's like,
yeah,
we all actually genuinely do think each other can do things when we tell each other we can do things.
Yeah, it's good. It's meaningful feedback. I think that's an amazing podcast, guys, and thanks for jumping on, and thanks for just being yourselves today and saying how it is.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Cheers for having us.
Awesome.